So hello everybody, welcome to the Kansas Fest A2 Forever Mega Podcast.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz?
So, I guess what we can do, maybe just go around the room and introduce ourselves. I don't know that we're ordered in the same way in everybody's screen. I'm Paul, and I am on the Retro Computing Roundtable, and on Drop 3 Inches, we hope more, but at least sometimes. Ron, who are you?
I'm Ron. I think you covered it. No, I'm Ron from Ron's Computer Videos. This is my second in-person K-Fest and my fourth overall. I'm just really happy to be here today. This has been a really cool event. I met a lot of really, really great people who've expanded my knowledge on this topic. So I'm just happy to be here.
Excellent. Kat.
Hi, I'm Kat. I'm not even sure how many Kansas Fests this is at this point. I have lost track. I host a Twitch stream every Sunday called Retro Metal. Right now we are trying to kill the Lord of Storms.
Javier.
Hey, I am Javier Rivera. I'm Adventures of Retro Computing and also on the Retro Repair Roundtable on Sundays. So, hello everybody.
Excellent. Chris?
All right, I am Chris Torrance, and I have the Assembly Lines podcast, and I was just counting in my head, and I guess this is actually my 9th Kansas Fest, shockingly. So 2015 was the first one, and happy to be here.
Excellent. Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh. I go by 48K RAM pretty much everywhere online in the retro scene. I think I have been to 2.5 Kansas Fests at this point, all online. I'm a general retro computer enthusiast, repairer, streamer.
And Ken.
Hi, I'm Ken Gagne. I'm the editor-in-chief of JuiceGS, and I recently relaunched the website a2central.com, also one of the founding co-hosts of the Open Apple podcast.
Yeah, I was just trying to do the math here for how many I've been to. Ken, how many have you been to?
This was my 26th consecutive Kansas Fest. So I started going in 1998.
Golly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like 3 years old. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think this was my 11th. I guess basically what we could do is just sort of like talk about the event. Josh and I are the only ones that were not there in Kansas City. So, I mean, there are various things we could talk about. The session content was pretty amazing. This year, if somehow you don't know, it was kind of focused on the Apple III based on the III at the end of 2023. And so we had one of the things that I think was the greatest about this was that we actually managed to get the designer of the Apple III to come and do a Q&A. Wendell Sander came and talked with us. And we had Bob Consorti, who's one of the big, he ran one of the biggest sort of like Apple III supporting companies in the dying days of the Apple III. And then we had Dave Adelini, who is a journalist and sort of like talked with them both, as well as talking with us about his work with the Washington Apple Pi III special interest group and stuff. So that was really neat. I think it was actually really cool to reconnect Dave with the other two, because they hadn't really been in contact like that before. So that was the thing that I liked a lot. So maybe we can sort of go around. I don't know how to choose people. Does anyone want to jump in and talk about anything?
Start with Javier.
Okay. That's always the rule.
Whoops. Well, I was a proud presenter of the Apple IIc, what do we call it? Monitor and, you know, making the Apple IIc portable.
That is so super cool, by the way.
Yeah.
Vince and I spent a year actually working on this. This is a monitor for the LCD for the Apple IIc, but also folds. And on the back, it holds a battery and some other things that we can hold in the future. and it gets attached. I don't have the attachment right now, but it gets attached to the Apple IIc so it doesn't fall off. And, you know, Vince mostly, but I myself also, we spend a lot of time doing some designs in 3D, printing them out, and doing some tests on, you know, how it will work, how it will look, how it will, hold on. And we came out with that, and we presented it on Kansas Fest, and I think it's a great achievement, great success, and people like it a lot. So we're going to continue tweaking it. It's going to be a lot better. We're planning to do things like Wi-Fi, hard drives, and more things. So that's one of the things that we presented at Kansas Fest. Another thing that I did quickly is I presented my floppy emulator, big screen. It's basically a case from the floppy emulator with a big screen, and it resembles an Apple II 3.5 drive. So that, those are the things that I presented.
Oh, yeah.
I was working.
Very cool. Very cool. Anyone else?
Yeah, I can jump in.
Yeah,
sure. So this year's Kansas Fest, it was really interesting because we had a lot of newcomers, and it seemed like maybe more than other years. I don't know. It's always hard to tell. But I counted at least maybe 12 people who were brand new. Maybe there were even more. And they seemed to have a great time. And we had a couple problems during the show. You know, some things didn't go quite as planned. But they just rolled with that. And several of them came up to me near the end and just said that they had such an awesome time. They were, you know, hoping to come back next year. A couple other highlights. Jay Kraft gave an awesome talk about doing new cool audio and video things on the 2GS, and specifically with the Aztec game, which I love. So that was amazing. And just on a personal note, I got to drive the Apple II cart once. And so if you don't know, if you haven't been there, there is a golf cart that we use to take people up to the cafeteria if they have trouble walking or just need a ride. And apparently I was such a bad driver that Stephen Buggy was in the cart, and he got out halfway and decided he was going to walk. I might have taken the speed bumps a little too fast for him. But Margaret and Rachel hung on to the bitter end and never rode with me again. So that was the end of my driving days.
Yeah, it's harder than you think. I've driven that thing, and it's not... Everybody's like, oh, it's just a golf cart. It's not easy.
No.
I rode on it when I was taking packages up to mail them later, and we did get stopped by campus police. I guess we were going a little bit too fast.
Yeah.
So my court date is on the 16th. If anybody wants to come and serve as a character witness, I would really appreciate that.
Or against you.
Yeah, you don't want these character witnesses.
Yeah, I said, you weren't really? Yeah, oh, yeah, no, this guy? Yeah, I know that this guy.
Oh, him? Let's not make it like the Seinfeld finale. That's all I'm asking.
Oh, God.
Do the Seinfeld defense. My shinies are like my favorite part of Kansas Fest, and I don't really have them ready to go, but I picked up. In good news, I did actually kind of sort of make the 2C talk to the plotter last night.
Cool.
Oh, did you get the plotter? I saw the plotter in the photos.
I got both plotters. I have both of them, and I got the space tablet.
That's cool.
But the plotter that doesn't work right, it's already been kind of sort of claimed. I just had to figure out how to get it where it needs to be to someone who can probably get it going. When the pen head goes all the way to the left to switch colors, because that's the pens. If you haven't seen an Apple color plotter, the pens are mounted in a little cylinder and there's four of them. Yeah. And when it goes over, there's like a finger that pushes to change the pens, and on one of them that there's a timing issue with that, and a lot of times it'll go over but it won't actually kick, or it'll only kick part of the way, so suddenly you're like trying to plot like this and it's not working. But the other one I have the one that's working. The only thing I need to do is figure out the little fingers that hold the paper are rusty. I'm trying to figure out how to I have stuff that'll take rust off of stainless steel. I just have to figure out how to do it without getting water in the plotter. But yeah, that was last night's big thing. I got Apple Writer. It sent a carriage return, but I haven't actually gotten it to plot anything. because, but I have like, I do have this and I have the other part of it in digital form. So that's been kind of my project. And then I'm still looking for the software for the space tablet.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And actually what's cool about the space tablet. So the space tablet is you can trace 3D objects with it. So Penguin Software distributed these.
And Kate, it just uses the the keyboard
uses the joystick interface. I got the little adapter on it already because I've been. Mm-hmm. So fun fact, the mech joystick, although it doesn't appear as a joystick, because I tried to run Mech Computer Inspector with it mm-hmm. plugged in, and when I run Mech Inspector with it plugged in, it says there's nothing plugged into the joystick port.
Nice.
Yeah. Ooh, interesting.
So it doesn't see it as a joystick. I have a disk image that says Complete Graphics System Tablet Edition, so I just need to make a disk of that. I need to send that over to the 2C and see if that's what I want. And then I did notice... It does look pretty easy to get into the innards of this thing. It's just a couple of screws, so if I do need to go in and like clean pots or something, it shouldn't be too hard. Because I really don't want to mess this thing up.
Yeah, no, there are probably very few of them out there now.
There are very few of these out there, yeah. I got all the rare stuff off the pile. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that is super cool.
That's pretty incredible. I'm really curious how it manages three axes of input on a joystick port. It must be digital.
I posted it on Facebook, and Mark
Pelzarski, yeah.
He was a guest, and I still can't say his name. He actually chimed in, and I guess, yeah, they're apparently the Apple II joystick port can read three pots.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, most people don't think about that or realize it because you only need two for X and Y. But I guess I really haven't had a much of a chance to play with a bunch of stuff. A bunch of other stuff on my plate right now. But yeah, I'm hoping to do like digital art and digital spirography with the stuff, Spirograph. And it's just a matter of getting stuff up and going.
Yeah.
It's super cool that it's possible to talk with Mark Pelzarski on Facebook about like how this was made.
I was like, oh my god, Senpai has noticed me.
I did a monitor for him a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and I told him, hey, somebody has some Penguin software, you should go and check it out. So yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty, I think, geeked to see it too.
He was excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, wow, this thing. I remember this thing. This is like. I'm like,
rare.
I'm like, it just looked like, it didn't look like much sitting on the pile. I'm like, yeah, it looks like something I could, you know, mess around with to like draw on or whatever.
Yeah, just in case anyone listening doesn't know, Mark Pelzarski is basically the founder of Penguin Software. They started with a Magic Paintbrush, which I suspect may have, been chosen as a name just because it matches his initials. Yeah, that's super cool. I didn't know who got the plotter, but I have a plotter that's been sitting there for years. I've been hoping to connect it to an Apple III and plot stuff, and I just haven't. But that is very cool.
Connected to the Apple III.
I have to learn math, y'all. I'm an English. I have an English degree. I don't math.
All right. Anyone else want to talk about anything about the event?
Ron.
Yeah, I would say that as someone who just came and showed up, not part of the board, not somebody that had like all of these like contingencies to deal with and people to please and things like that, I had an amazing time. I showed up, I ate breakfast, I went and worked out, I got to hang out with my friends for a week and make a ton of new friends. And I would say that probably... some of my favorite stuff that I did is hanging out and doing the Vince's solder party because there were a lot of people. Like the pros got there early and they kicked those projects out. And then it was people like me kind of there at the tail end. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And that's a cool card.
Yeah.
That was a really great redesign to kind of take something that was a bunch of surface mount stuff, make it all through hole so that just anybody could put them together. And I think we ended up at the end of the night with like 100%. I say we, that I did nothing other than sit there and just kind of look at other people's stuff and say, why so many solder balls? You know, that type of thing. But just had an amazing time doing that type of stuff. And there were so many of those little activities and gatherings or stuff, just stopping by and talking to Sark or Ian or, you know, talking to DJ and just hanging out and getting to see people you don't see every day. That was probably my favorite part. The garage giveaway was just massive this year. I know last year we were kind of like starved for certain things. And it seems like this year, all those items that were in short supply last year showed up this year, like displays and stuff like that. So there were two GSs last year, but there weren't necessarily displays. So it ended up where I was like, if there is one left on Friday, I'll take one. And so now I finally have a working 2GS display that didn't require Sark to, like, you know, just like it was stick his head up. All right, just like 20 more, you know, 20 more caps, and I got this.
Inbox.
Just yeah. Had an amazing time with all that. So.
Ron, you said you woke up, had breakfast, and worked out?
Yeah, actually, not to give out the big secret, but if you reach out and talk to the director of athletics and you just say, hi, I'm attending a event on your campus next week, I wanted to find out if it's possible to sign up for a temporary membership to your student center or to your student activity center, which they call the MAC. They're like, oh, yeah, you can do that. Just come in and sign a waiver and stuff. And just, you know, if we're having a special event, don't come by at those times. And yeah, and they've got like a really nice fitness center there on campus. So
wow.
It's like a ton of treadmills, a ton of like stair machines, like not Peloton, but kind of like whatever the other version of that is, weight room, all that. It's real nice.
Interesting.
So a couple days I just went over there and ran on the treadmill and walked around the perimeter of campus. Campus is beautiful if you get out and explore. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like little restaurants and things like that that are kind of at the edge. One of them absolutely looks like the new front for Los Polos Hermanos, but at the other end of campus, there's like a Tiki Taco and some other neat stuff, but it's like 2.5 miles around campus. So it's a nice, with some hills and visual interest. So it's really nice to get out there and walk. I know that you've been biking and stuff out there, Ken.
That's right. Jeremy Merle, who came to his first in-person Kansas Fest last year, he drives in from St. Louis, brings his bicycle, and the last 2 years I've been to Kansas Fest with my bicycle. So he goes riding either every morning or every other morning, and anybody who wants to join him can. Last year I stayed in Kansas City for 5 weeks after Kansas Fest, so I got to know the bike routes as well. So last year neither of us had any idea where we were going. This year we were like, boom, let's go do the trolley trail. And we just did that. It was great to get out and mix things up a little bit. Jeremy's currently in training to do the Katy Trail, which runs 240 miles west of St. Louis.
Wow.
And back in 2009, instead of flying to Kansas Fest, I flew to St. Louis, bought a bicycle, and bicycled the Katy Trail to Kansas City. So I went west, and he's going to be bicycling east. So... it's pretty cool that this similar, I mean, I think one person put it as like, how many people get to enjoy the Apple II and cycling together at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's
mm-hmm.
cool to share that hobby. The garage giveaway was very cool as always, because we had the influx of materials from both the Wagner and Diaz estates. Of course, Roger Wagner, I wrote in Juice GS about how I stayed at his house for a month this past winter, and Chris flew out from Denver, and we had some locals helping us as well, going through everything. And that tied into the garage giveaway, where as a nomad, everything I own basically needs to fit in my car. So I try not to accumulate more stuff, which is probably healthy for a number of other reasons. So like last year, instead of doing the garage giveaway, I, with Chris, went to the airport to pick up the keynote speaker. Because like they were like, we need somebody with a car who doesn't want anything from the garage giveaway. I was like, oh, that's me.
Yeah, that's a very specific use case.
Right. And so this year, I didn't have a reason not to be there, but I was like, I still don't want stuff. So I was just kind of looking around to see what's there. And I was like, oh, there's a really nice, pristine box of wizardry here. It reminds me of the one that I saw at Roger Wagner's house. And then I started like... It was just sort of a facepalm moment. I was like, oh, this is the one from Roger Wagner's house. So I got this,
And Chris had actually done an Assembly Lines podcast about this. And like, I was holding up this box on his video. I was like, oh, here we are 7 months and 2,000 miles later, reunited. So I was like, okay, I can find room in my car for an empty box. So I got that nice wizardry box. Let's see. I also gave a talk about being a nomad, and I didn't realize at the time that this was my first in-person talk since before the pandemic. So it was nice to be up in front of an audience again. And in fact, somebody who heard the talk expressed interest in working for the company I do, which is what enables my lifestyle. So they now have an application in at my company, which is pretty cool. So that would be a neat outcome. Also going into the event, I was really glad that last year's simultaneous in-person and online events got split out. I thought that was a good idea. I did have my doubts beyond that about like the structure and content of the online talk, but it actually worked out really well. For the first time ever, I actually ended up leaving Kansas Fest early due to a COVID outbreak, and having the opportunity a week later to see some of the talks I missed was really welcome. And to do the Q&A live with people for those sessions that I missed was pretty cool. I thought the online event having a mix of live and pre-recorded events actually worked out really well, because if it was all original content, I'd be sitting at my computer for 9 hours, and I already do that Monday through Friday. So this time I could tune in for the original talks or the pre-recorded talks I missed. And then if there was one coming up that I'd already saw in person, I was just like, I can step away from my computer for an hour. Oh, and there's a lunch break after that. So now I have like a 2-hour break, and that actually worked out really well. So I liked that. And I still think there are some things about the online event that could change, but what I really want to focus on right now is I thought the online event went really well, and in a lot of ways, I actually preferred it to the in-person event, which I did not expect. So good job to the committee and to Paul.
Excellent. Yeah, glad to hear it. Yeah. And you identified exactly the I'm glad that you noticed the extended breaks for things you'd already seen. That was part of the plan. So that worked out well. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, one more thing. While I was at Rockhurst, since I'm a nomad, I'm always anticipating where I'm going to be so I can have things shipped so that they're there when I arrive. And one of the things that arrived for me while I was at Rockhurst was The Apple II Age by Lane Nooney, which I have not yet read. This book came out earlier this year, 2 months ago in May. It's all about the rise of the personal computer, as I understand it. And they did a lot of original interviews with developers and users of Apple II from that era. And some people very superficially complained, that's not an Apple II on the cover. They can't even get the cover right. Well, if you go into if you go into print shop on the Apple II and you ask for computer, this is the image it gives you. This is a print shop image from the Apple II, and the print shop features prominently in this book. And, to cat's delight, there's also a cat on the...
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I can say is so we were talking before we actually went live on YouTube about this little set of... it's a little set of like flashcards, computer hardware flashcards, which apparently, Kat, you had experience with.
I had those as a kid. God, I remember those. Oh, I'm so jealous that you have those.
Yeah. So there's a thing like this. It says on the back, it says computer printout paper. But this reminded me a little bit that on this, this is just EduCards. I don't know what company it is, EduCards, but they. For the microcomputer card, it's an Apple II. So it's sort of the reverse case of Lane's book. But yeah, I do really like that cover though, in a way, because it does have that people have that reaction like, oh, how could this be about an Apple II and it doesn't have this Apple II on the cover? It's actually a North Star advantage. But the thing. It's actually like this really subtle in-joke for the people who were stuck with print shop trying to make a computer and that's all they had available. I really kind of love that.
And, of course, I'll also mention Sophistication and Simplicity from Dr. Steve Weirich is also available at juiced.gs for no discount because it's already only $15.
Right.
And they go great together. These are not competing books. Because there is no one perspective and no one exhaustive history of the Apple II. So I highly recommend that you buy both.
The more the merrier.
That's right.
Ken, I would second your recommendation for both of them. I'm about halfway through Lane's book, and I will say it's kind of a refreshing a refreshing look at the history of the Apple II, but not just the Apple II, you know, where Sophistication and Simplicity is an awesome book, but it's really pretty narrowly focused on the Apple II, whereas Lane's book really focuses on the Apple II in the context of the rest of society. So what was going on? What were kind of the motivations of the people? And not only that, but just kind of where its kind of development came in relationship to the people who were actually creating it in terms of their upbringing, you know, the fact that they were, you know, fairly affluent people, most of them who were developing this computer in a kind of Western country that had a lot of resources at their disposal. And so it's a little bit harder to get into perhaps than just a very simple history of a computer. But it's well worth it.
Yeah, one thing I'll say is that Lane Nooney is an academic, which comes with it a couple of things. One is that, I have not even started this book yet, so I'm not commenting on this in particular, but I've read some books about video games published by MIT Press, and those are written by academics, usually for academics, and I, to your point, Chris, find them a little bit harder to get into. However, there is, in my opinion, based on reviews I've seen in Slack and on Facebook, a misconception, and I'm sure Paul can speak to this, that academics should only report the facts. You know, they should just dryly recite what is true, like what is historical. And I don't agree at all, because I used to teach, and my students, if they passed in a paper that was just facts and no conclusions, then I would give them a bad grade for not engaging and synthesizing the material. So my understanding is that Lane Nooney is, you know, drawing some hypotheses, and, you know, they have a thesis statement, and they're pulling facts together that demonstrate a certain narrative. And that is really interesting to me, because I want to know this perspective on the Apple II. And, you know, you're welcome to accept or reject it, but that's what they're doing, and I think that's totally valid and expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting. It isn't actually even so much about the history of the, you know, Apple II or software specifically. It's kind of like looking at software categories like business software and education software, and sort of how that fit. The education software chapter is really interesting in that it really drives home just how much of a just bald profit grab that was. I mean, all the publishers got into it thinking like, this is where the money is. Without any particular care about the actual education angles, just like, you know, this is a market that we can sell to, make parents feel better about buying their kid a thing for video games.
Well, one of the things that I did read in an interview with Nooney is that, like, televisions, when they were invented, very quickly got adopted. Like, it went from like 0% ownership to mass penetration in the American household in less than a decade. Whereas computers were a harder sell. They were much more slowly adopted by consumers because, yeah, televisions, they do one thing. They show video. Computers, they do everything. And that's, you know, when you try to be everything for everyone, you end up being nothing for nobody. And so it's interesting to hear that, like, we tend to romanticize that computers came around the early 70s and just mass transformed everything, when the reality is, like, a lot of people didn't know what to do with these things and if they should even have one.
Yeah, I think there was a long period where people didn't know, like, you know, they were just flailing to try to find something, like maybe recipes, I don't know, addresses, what can we put on this thing? What's it good for?
Hey, I already have all my recipes in the computer now. What else is there to do with it?
Yeah. Some people still don't know what to do with a computer.
So let's see, Josh, was there anything that you wanted to, you hadn't had a chance to really sort of like talk about the sessions and stuff? Josh, by the way, was a huge help during the virtual event, and also streamed his 2C playing videos and things. It was quite nice.
That was fun for me. One of the biggest things that I'm into with vintage computers is the demo scene. And last year, you know, my sort of pseudo hackfest Slackfest entry was that I set up my Apple IIc to run a whole bunch of Vince Weaver's tweet sized basic graphics demos. Just randomly, every time you turn it on, it would pick a different one and just run it. So it was kind of fun to, stream that for the little intermissions, because we kept seeing people like, when's the session starting? Let me just put up some infographics, tell you what time we're back, and give you something silly to watch. And that was a lot of fun. Kansas Fest for me is traditionally it's the month, like July is when my Apple IIs get to come down off the shelf and get a little time on the bench. And then they go back away and make room for Leo Terry's. So this is the month where I get to play around with all the Apples. And I get a chance to do some stuff with it while watching the sessions. It was a very busy week for me at work during the actual in-person Kansas Fest, so I didn't get to watch a lot of what was streamed. But I super appreciate how fast you turned those videos around to watch prior to the online version. I still didn't get a chance to watch as many as I wanted, but I really enjoyed it. For the past 3 years that I've been involved, you know, distantly, virtually, it's been a lot of fun. The community around the Apple II is just absolutely brilliant, second to none. And I love to be a part of that, even online. Maybe someday I'll actually get dragged out to Missouri. But any chance I can get to interface with super dedicated, really enthusiastic computer nerds, I will take it, like even if it is on the Apple II. I really enjoy it. I've been following Kansas Fest stuff since, you know, Twitter was on and people were tweeting photos and stuff like that. It's always great to experience in any way that I can. So I love that there's a real virtual event for this now.
I think there was a lot of hardware this year, like a lot of new interesting hardware projects, some overlapping, but I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing what develops in the coming year here with the Ultimate Drive and there's the VidHD, you know, Ethernet using Pi project and stuff. Some pretty wild stuff.
I was gonna say, yeah, I kind of want to mod my 2C with the Vince Javier thing, just because I don't know, I want to go to like a cafe and be like flop and just be like, hi, I'm gonna play games. What the,
I think you should call it the 2C minus, because you're getting rid of all the bloat, right?
Yeah. Right,
yep.
I'm very excited about that project too.
And Chris, your the force feedback thing on your emulator is the coolest thing. that is an excellent addition.
Yeah, I thought the funniest part about that was when I was showing the emulator and I wanted Ken to come up and try it out, and I was like, of all the people here, he will be the one who will recognize the amazingness of this. And so he starts playing Karateka, and he's like, what are you talking about? Because to him, a game having like force feedback or rumble is like second nature. And then, you know, finally he was like, oh, okay, I get it, I get it.
Well, I went to Chris afterward one-on-one, and I apologize. And what I explained was, it's that when – so I was playing that game with like an – was it a PlayStation or an Xbox controller?
Yeah, Xbox controller, yeah.
Yeah, and so when I'm holding an Xbox controller, it's not surprising that the controller would rumble. Like with that form factor, that's just expected.
Yep.
If you had handed me like – an Apple II controller and it started rumbling, I would have been like, holy crap, what have you done? So
okay, like, witchcraft is this?
You know, the controller is the intermediary between me and the game, and I forgot to take it one step further and say, okay, I'm holding a modern controller, but I'm playing an Apple II game, and the fact that an Apple II game is causing rumble, that is extremely impressive, and I apologize that I didn't give you
no
the delivery
need.
That it warranted.
Yeah, no need to apologize at all. So,
but I think any one of us probably would have, because I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, it always rumbles in my hand when I you know, punch a Vex, so why shouldn't it rumble in my hand when I punch the Eagle or whatever? Not that I've ever gotten that far, mm-hmm. But
I think that's more of an undiagnosed tremor disorder, though. I just
well except that I play a warlock in Destiny, so I don't really punch things. I slap.
I mean, somebody handed me a PlayStation, you know, DualShock, and I was like, "What? I feel this all the time. What are you talking about?"
Did anybody attend or watch Lucas's generic tile engine presentation? I saw a lot of people talking about that online, and that they were very impressed with it. You know, the Super Mario Brothers presentation.
Yep.
Yeah, I got to go back and watch. I still haven't got a chance to catch up on everything I want to catch up on.
Yeah, that was it was a port using, I think, generally using his graphic tile engine that he had developed. He talked about that last year. I don't have much to say about it exactly, but it's cool. It was getting a lot of interest. Also, the Digital Eclipse presentation about the history of Karateka.
Yeah, that was
I need to actually buy that on PSN and play it.
Yeah, when Chris coordinated that with Digital Eclipse, I saw Chris Kohler's name on the schedule and I was blown away because I've seen him speak at PAX East. He has a very prestigious lineage of, or portfolio rather, in the video game community. And we have been adjacent to each other. Like he has no idea who I am, but we both know this person and that person. So I was like, wow, Digital Eclipse at Kansas Fest. That's really cool. And I just assumed, okay, well, they did that Atari 50 thing and that's sort of Apple II adjacent. So we'll probably hear about, in general, video game preservation. And then a week before Kansas Fest, I got a press release emailed to me by Digital Eclipse saying, by the way, we're doing an entire documentary about Karateka. I was like, oh, this makes sense now. I guess I should say full disclosure. There's almost like a crowdfunding website, except it's an actual investment company called Republic. And I invested in Digital Eclipse. So I kind of forgot I had done that. I was like, oh, yeah, Digital Eclipse is great. And I was like, oh, I'm going to profit off this. So I
think they may still be great, though.
Yes, but you have to take everything I say now with a grain of salt.
Okay.
But we should go out and buy it right away, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I too might
put it right next to your grains of salt.
Yeah.
Buy it on as many platforms as you can play it on.
But yeah, this is the first documentary they've done, interactive documentary, about a single game, as opposed to a collection of games or a company or a franchise. So
yeah.
I really hope it does well because I want more like this.
Yeah, I get the feeling that they perhaps want to make more in the future. You know, I mean, I can't remember exactly what Chris said that led me to believe that, but it sounded like, you know, this hopefully will be perhaps one of many if they can wing it. So.
And unsurprisingly, Chris was speaking very knowledgeably. He answered a ton of questions.
Yeah.
I think I asked, what happens if you put the documentary in upside down? And he said, we don't just reverse the images. We actually load a different disc image that has the game upside down. So we are trying to very authentically emulate. And
that's
a lot of
hardcore.
People, and several
that's
people,
super cool.
I think several people asked, how are you emulating the games? And he said, oh, it's actually proprietary stuff that they have. It's not just a package of MAME, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, speaking of that, that reminds me also one of the people who works on AppleWin gave a talk about copy protection dongles, which is that was a pretty cool, you know, like topic that, you know, when you're emulating, those are the things that are hard to emulate. I mean, like, you know, they're designed specifically to be kind of opaque and you plug them in to your hardware to make them work. And so he's been working to get enough information to get AppleWin to emulate them, which I think that was a interesting thing I hadn't thought about much.
So that was interesting to me because sewing machines have done that for a long time. Embroidery machines have done that. Husqvarna Viking is really bad about it. If you don't have the dongle, it won't talk to the computer and you can't upload your own designs. And so it's just like, wow, that's where they got the idea. And I'm going to have flashbacks now because I've tried to crack a couple machines and been smacked up against the wall. It's hard.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty interesting that we learned about Stephen Buggy's uranium collection.
Oh my god!
that came out of left field. he was talking. I mean, he was generally talking
New
about
Mexico,
EPROMs.
New Mexico, it makes sense. It's the, you know, that's, you know, I don't know how close he actually is to, like, Alamogordo or the Trinity site, but.
Those poor EPROMs, though.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other talks I thought was really interesting was the kind of the applesauce, I don't want to say clone, but it was, I think it was Tom Yachi, and it was some sort of device which I haven't totally wrapped my head around, but it's basically lets you copy. It goes between an Apple II disk drive and maybe a modern computer, but also an Apple II, and it lets you flux copy disks.
Yeah.
But it also acts as an emulator and maybe a storage device for those disk images or something like that. And that was really just just kind of a fascinating project. It'll be interesting to see where he kind of takes that.
With as hard as it's getting, I know that for Applesauce, they're having a hard time sourcing parts. So
yeah,
that's cool that somebody's taking it in a different direction so that we can still do that preservation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, it'll all go RP 2040 based, and then you just won't be able to get those.
Yeah. Don't say that. Don't say that.
But yeah, it does seem like it's kind of like a mix between, it's some fusion of like Floppy Emu and Applesauce, and it seems like it's a little unclear what formats it's going to save in, but it does seem like it saves in something like the same format that Applesauce uses, so at least there will be some interoperability too. So, but yeah, that's I had no idea that was happening. I mean, that appeared actually quite late. Like, we'd already set the schedule, and then we learned about this project. Oh, the Nox Archaeus bug, that was entertaining. The overflow. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that was, if for those of you that didn't see it, that was where, so in the Nox Archaeus game from 6502 Workshop, you're fighting, Lord British is in the game as a guest, and he's supposed to help you, but if you choose to fight him,
because that's such an Ultima thing to do, what you do in Ultima is you attack Lord British.
Yep. Then there is a spell you can cast, which basically rains cows down upon your enemies. And if you do that enough times against Lord British, he turns into a cow and just sort of stands there just taking it and eating grass. there's an entire series of videos, I think, on the 6502 Workshop channel about that bug, but Mark Lemmert did a good job describing it.
Yeah.
And now I need to go throw cows at Lord British in my game to see what happens.
Yep.
I assume he patched it for Lord of Storms. I'd have to go back to my original.
Nope.
It's not patched in Lord of Storms.
Oh, he's not going to patch it. He is not.
Okay, cool. Because I could, Lord British just shows up, no. To help you in Lord of Storms. So it's like, oh, he's right here. Cow, cow, cow.
Nope. Yeah, he's not going to fix that bug because it's too funny.
Too funny to patch.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yep. Wait, if you know about a bug and you choose not to patch it, is it no longer a bug?
It's a feature. It's a feature.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so it was a bug.
Not only you know how to fix it as well, and you don't.
Yeah, because I assume Mark knows how to fix it. Yeah.
So in a way, he did fix the bug by making it no longer a bug.
Yep. It's an Easter egg now.
Yeah, now it's an Easter egg.
Closed, won't fix.
Right. User error.
Yeah, there was I feel like somehow we haven't talked about much about this, but there was actually a fair amount of Apple III content too. I mean,
yeah, there was some good Apple III content. I really enjoyed the fact listening to, especially Wendell Sander, just like reminiscing about the Apple. Like, I'm like, this is so cool. He's something he's probably hasn't thought about in years and years and years. And now we've got this like record of him, talking about this project that, to him, was probably just, it's another thing he did. But to us, it's like, this is a rare beast that we all like to play with. And now it's a thing. And it's just, just the difference in perception.
Yeah, I think that's kind of neat about, like, when we make contact with people like, Mark Polsarski and just our various keynotes and stuff. These, a lot of times there are people who haven't really thought about this stuff much. And, at least in my mind, these people are like mega celebrities, right? And like normal people shouldn't be able to talk to them, but by now nobody remembers, and it's really kind of fun to just get that connection again.
I mean, last year when we had Bob Woodhead, he was just like I'm going to be a rock. He's like, by the end of it, he's just walking around like, I'm a rock star. I'm gonna walk around and all these people are gonna follow me, and I'm gonna tell them all those crazy stories about getting pulled over in my really fast Corvette and all this other stuff. And it's just like, I remember Burger Becky said in her keynote in 2015, she's like, Kansas Fest contacted me, and I was like, wait, that's still a thing? So yeah, it's just really, really neat.
Yeah, I also thought it was cool
that people didn't really say much about, but was really, I think, the highlight is how Wendell shared his love
of grandfather clocks with us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
often against our will, but still, I just, if you're an enthusiast, you got to share your hobby with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also liked how Wendell Sander, when he, you know, when we first contacted him, I think he was kind of like most people who haven't thought about this. He was just like, well, I'm not going to remember anything. You know, that was so long ago. And sure, maybe he didn't remember, you know, a lot of the technical details, which I think people, you know, some people were asking him, well, how is the timing on this particular chip and why did you, you know, and but
I don't know.
But what he did have was he had all these insight into all of the people that he worked with, you know, like including, you know, like obviously like Steve Jobs and Wozniak. And it was more like he remembered specific things about these people and their personalities and kind of their foibles, perhaps. And that is just as fascinating, I think, to a lot of people as the, you know, kind of the gory technical details. So it's cool.
I think that's more fascinating because the gory technical details we can reverse engineer. We're, you know, at this point, we can reverse engineer a lot of that stuff. But, you know, the actual stories of the people that were involved, that's something you can only archive, you can only save if someone tells the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very true.
One of the other things that there was a talk about was getting the Fujinet working on the Apple III. But I think just to sort of broaden that, I mean, I think the Fujinet, I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing what that does over the next, you know, like year or two or something when it really starts. I think the Apple version of it is close to ready. You know, I think it's still undergoing a little bit of revisions, but the ability to talk among Apple IIs, Apple IIIs, Ataris, Commodores, I mean, it's really opens things up in an interesting way.
I purchased one of the dev boards at VCF East this year, and there's already quite a bit of stuff that you can do with it. And I've seen Javier and other people that have sort of different revisions of that board past that original kind of dev board. And it looks real cool, and there's a lot of neat stuff you can do with it. I like the idea of having a multi-user chat environment like on your Apple II machine, or be able to play games against other people over the internet. Plus the, of course, the whole ability to, you know, remotely load your software and stuff off of the server. And, I mean, it's way cool all over wireless. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that we want to incorporate to that portable Apple IIc. It's a Fujinet because it not only it's a Wi-Fi device, but also it has an SD card, so it actually acts as a hard drive, you know, as a floppy drive or hard drive. So you can read things. You can have files in there already, not only use the network. And, of course, you can load files remotely, or you can do, you know, a modem emulation and connect to PBS. So it's a lot of possibilities, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's coming. I mean, like, I there's been a lot of enthusiasm and work on it already, but I think we're getting pretty close to the tipping point, you know, where it's really gonna spread out.
Yeah, it's finally starting to get the multi-platform traction that Tom Cherryholmes really wanted to have when he and Moswald started designing the thing. I have four different versions of the Atari one as it was coming up, mm-hmm. and I was much more involved in it when it was coming up on Atari. I haven't assisted with bringing up on any other platform, but you know, for a while, it just really kind of sounded like it wasn't going to get any legs. And then suddenly it's like, oh, it's here on the Atom. Oh, it's here on the Commodore 64. Oh, it's here on the Apple II. And it's done amazing things for the Atari world. And I expect it to be really simple because of the extreme portability of the back end and stuff. Like the Atari has online scoreboards now and game lobbies. You can play multiplayer games. They're patching old games to support these new features, and absolutely all that can make it to the Apple II, and it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's a real shame that, I mean, they've made so many big strides on the Atari version of this, but it still does not change the fundamental fact that you're using an Atari. I guess there are just some mountains that are just too tall to scale. I understand.
I mean, not everyone is up to the challenge of conquering Mount Fuji.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, I actually brought my Fujinet to Kansas Fest, but it didn't work because I flashed it with an advanced or another version of the software that it was not for my card, so that's why it didn't work.
Darn.
I just fixed it. Mm. Too late.
I used my Fujinet at KFest. I put it on my phone's hotspot, and because I figure I was like, it's data, but it's like, oh man, 128K. It's like I could load a game or a GIF, I guess. choose.
It is going to be really interesting to see kind of like what networking brings, because I think there was there's been like Ethernet networking and stuff like that on the Apple II for a while, but I think it's not widely adopted in the way that I think Fujinet will be. You know, I mean, like, it's certainly priced lower, and the Fujinet does more things. So I think that is really going to be interesting. In a way, I mean, the thing that kind of made the Apple II special was the fact that it is this little island. Like, you know, you don't talk to anybody, you just talk to your Apple II. And so I don't know if this is good or bad, but anyway, it's interesting.
Well, I think with like the Ethernet, the part of the problem is there's no kind of community that you can, like, a widespread thing, server, whatever, that you can connect to. And, you know, back in the day when we all had modems, perhaps, on our Apple IIs, you could talk to a lot of people because there were people just out there. But I think with the Fujinet, the advantage is now there actually is an active, you know, there's web servers, there's a bunch of them that you can connect to. And so that's going to drive adoption, I think, more than, say, the Ethernet.
Yeah. Yeah,
Chris just struck on the exact thing that helped computers take off. Mm-hmm. The exact thing, which was social interaction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bridging mm-hmm. distances, especially in an era when a long distance phone call would cost you 7 cents or something like that. I mean, in 1970s dollars, you talk to your friends all over the world anytime you wanted to. And I think when people figured out that social part of that, that's when just the floodgates opened for adoption. And I think, again, that's part of the reason why that's why Kansas Fest is still a thing, is being able to, it's great that you can bridge those gaps, but it's kind of come full circle where it's like, now I need those person-to-person interactions. I need to be able to give my friend a big hug or shake their hand and all of that too.
Just a quick note, Christopher in the chat reminded us that the A2 Retronet, which is one of the projects Oliver Schmidt, presented that could act like a slotted Fujinet, so it's like it's a way to put a Fujinet in a slot, sort of. It's not Fujinet only, but it can do you could connect it to a Fujinet software. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Josh. You were saying something.
I was just going to say that, and this occurred to me earlier, I think, when we were talking about Lane's book, that every killer app brought with it its own segment of the population to that computer. You know, VisiCalc is just businesses like, yeah, I'm in, right? You know, Mech and all the Eduware schools were like, yep, we're on board. And there's games today are not what they were back then. You know, the ubiquity of computer gaming now is just completely taken for granted, but back then it wasn't, right? And gamers, people who bought these machines for games, this is a much smaller subset now, but the internet. You're exactly right. The internet communication, that was the killer app that suddenly appealed to everybody. And 1997, 8, 9 comes along. And yeah, suddenly it's ubiquitous. Like you said about that long tail or long rise, rather.
Another thing that I saw, I was very excited, is all the new hardware that is going to be or is being created for the Apple III. I think that's very, very important and very good to note. And I was not even aware that there's a new version of the motherboard, of the Apple III motherboard, Apple III Plus, I think. I'm not sure. But yeah, I heard that there's actually a motherboard recreated. So that's another good thing.
Yeah, Joe Strosnyder of Joe's Computer Museum has been doing a lot of really sort of, he's gone all in on that and gave a talk about that. And that's I think that's going to be a big help for people who have actual hardware, you know, like needing to replace chips. A couple of the rare boards that let you do extra stuff, like, so the 2E emulator and the you know, the CPM card, he's made recreations of. So, yeah, it's pretty, I think that is also quite important. I mean, I think that's going to help drive things, drive people's interest if they can find an Apple III.
And also software, you know, there's when I went and looked for software on Asimov or an archive, I couldn't find too much. But lately, there's been people that actually are uploading, you know, files. I got a bunch of files from Jose Luis in Spain. He bought a bunch of Apple III. And then Frodo Jedi also is buying a lot of Apple III software, and he just acquired an applesauce because he wants to just, you know, write it and put them up and share it with the community because there's a lack of software, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an issue.
And a lot of it was copy protected, and a lot of it is business software, you know. But so I have a you know, probably fairly rare one of, that is for running a dental office, you know. I'm not sure that anyone's really going to want to play that later, but I do want to archive it, and a lot of it's protected because it's business software, and they, you know, they want to make sure that they sell it.
Yeah. Apple Soft can, so yeah.
Yep.
By the way, if it's not too late to mention some of our favorite sessions, it just came up. Joe Strosnyder gave a great talk on, the, I think, the very first day of Kansas Fest.
Oh, yeah.
About how the failure of the Apple III basically kickstarted his entire online entrepreneurial enterprise. And I don't mean kickstarted in the crowdfunding sense. I really liked that story about how he was able to look back and connect the dots and see how these little things that happened led to where he is today. And I also appreciated the vulnerability he shared in discussing his personal life and the challenges that he's faced and how he overcame them and how that might be an inspiration for the rest of us, because it's been a rough 3 years or 7 years or more for some of us. And, you know, I appreciate the perseverance and optimism that we get from sessions like that. So thanks, Joe.
Yeah, it was very uplifting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so interesting, right? Some of those, you know, like the technical talks are very cool, but every now and then you'll get this kind of very personal story. You know, I think back also to like Burger Becky's keynote.
Oh yeah, that was so good.
We were all practically in tears by the end of it just from her, you know, and we were expecting some tech talk about her porting something to some, you know, SNES or something. And instead it was like this very, very personal story. And those are just so cool to hear and, you know, inspiring to everyone.
And as long as we're featuring talks with personal stories, Ken, I want to thank you for sharing your story about being the nomad, and it, especially just bringing it all into the light of how the Apple II has affected your life and your experiences. Like Lane's book, looking at the computer industry through the lens of the Apple II, looking at your life sort of through the lens of the Apple II. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun to talk about that. You know, my one comment I repeatedly get from my mother when I tell her about my adventures as a nomad for these last 4 years is, Ken, you have friends everywhere. You know, and there are a lot of things that contribute to that, such as working for a fully remote company that has 2,000 employees scattered around 90 countries. But the longer lasting impact is the Apple II. Like, I've had friends all around the world since I was 12 years old logging into the Apple II forum on CompuServe. And, you know, and then I was in my A2 Central talk that I gave online, from CompuServe to Genie to Delphi to Syndicom Online and Kansas Fest. You know, I have these friends everywhere. I can, you know, go out for lunch in Denver with Chris. Sorry, Chris, I just outed you as being in Denver. to going for a bike ride with Jeremy in St. Louis, to all these other people around the world that I get to hang out with. And, you know, it's, I love that anytime I land in a new city, I pull up my JuiceGS subscriber database and I was like, who's here? Who wants to hang out? And, you know, it's a lot of fun to have that network wherever I go.
It was cool, Ken. I appreciated the part of your story. You went all the way back to when you were created by Dr. Roy Kirk, kind of in the early 2000s, how you were sent out from Earth and eventually ran into Kirk and Spock and had that battle of wits there. I mean, it's one of my favorite episodes. So
that might be a different nomad. Oh.
Hold on, I might be linking to. Sorry, it's different nomad. I'm
sorry.
Though I would say the I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't expecting not it, but your talk closed the first day just beautifully. I mean, like it was a great sort of cap to the first, at least the first remote day.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. As I said, it's the first talk I've given in a long time. And Paul, I also appreciate that you fit me into the online schedule a week later to talk about A2 Central, because I missed the submission deadline by a week or two. And then I was just sitting around. I texted Sheppy. I was like, hey, Sheppy, do you want to give a talk with me at Kansas Fest Online? He's like, yeah. And I was like, great. And then I was like, oh, the deadline was 9 days ago. But I just emailed you and you made it work. And I appreciate that. So thank you.
Paul made everything work. It was pretty amazing.
From our side, everything worked.
Hey, real quick, I have to actually run. I'm going to the Barbie movie with my family. So
yeah,
enjoy it.
Thank you.
Enjoy
all the pink clothes.
Demolish the patriarchy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I've got my. Is this a suitable Ken shirt? Not Ken Gagne.
You know, having just seen the movie last night, I feel like there are two demographics that movie really speaks to: women and people named Ken. And I felt very seen and attacked.
I was going to say, did you survive?
No, it's an excellent movie. I really enjoyed it. It was you'll experience a variety of emotions.
Excellent. All right. Well, it's been great, and I'll just talk to you guys later. So,
bye, Chris.
So much.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Take care, Chris. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Good to see you.
Bye.
All right, let's talk about Chris.
Yeah, I was going to, now that Chris is gone, did anybody see anything about the smell? Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, he's vegan, so he doesn't need to shower. No, I'm kidding.
He just rubs that Swedish underarm crystal underneath there and he's all
No, so he's not vegan, but I had to tell somebody the story today about how Steve Jobs, when he worked at Atari, was vegan and thought that meant he didn't have to shower.
Oh yeah.
So right, they put him on the night shift and he was the only one on the night shift. Because nobody else wanted to smell him.
Of course, yeah.
Also, when pre-Texaco Towers in the Apple story, their first purpose-built office space, Steve was the only person that had their own office because no one wanted to share an office with Steve. Yeah,
pretty good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was occurring to me that if we send out stickers and pins and stuff like that for the next online version of this, we could also send out little things that smell to sort of recreate the experience. Maybe it's something that would
it'll be like a John Waters movie. You just blink, blink, blink on the screen. You
scratch his name.
That actually sounds like
shortcake. I love it.
So did you see that in conjunction with the new Ninja Turtles movie, there is a limited edition Xbox controller that has an insert into which you insert a plastic piece of pizza and it omits the smell of pizza while you're playing.
I did see that. I did see a pizza scented.
I wish you had.
So now you can game with all your senses. You can see the game. You can hear the game. You can smell it.
You can't just glue a pizza roll to the top of the controller you already own.
Or I could just pick up the phone and call and order a pizza bring it to my house and I can eat the pizza instead of just smelling the pizza. And it's probably better pizza.
So Pat, in my nomading, I was hanging out with Charles Mangan, and I did exactly what you said. I picked up the phone, I ordered a pizza, and he's like, why are you picking up the phone? Just order it through the app. Go on their website. And I was like, I'll just do it. It took 10 minutes because they had never taken a phone order before, and they had no idea how to do it.
Oh, see, when
you,
I order
you talk
pizza,
to somebody under 40, and they had no idea what to do.
See, yep, I don't. Sorry. When I order pizza, I generally order it from a local mom and pop, and they don't always have an app. When I'm talking about ordering pizza, I'm not ordering from Domino's or Pizza Hut. I'm ordering from the family owned place up the street.
Yeah.
This is the way.
Yes.
Yeah, as noted in the chat, I'm trying to avoid fees. I want to make sure that all the money goes to the pizzeria. If I'm trying to get it delivered, then that's different, but I was just doing pickup.
Yeah. There was, when I briefly lived in Montreal, I interacted with the phone in ordering a pizza, and it was actually pretty cool because I would speak in English and that person would speak in French and we could both happily communicate, but neither of us could really speak the other language very well to the other. And that's an experience that you don't get in the app.
Wow.
There's a Greek restaurant in town that recently closed that it always seemed like there was a labor dispute going on there. So you definitely wanted to, like, use the internet to place your order. You didn't really want to speak to anybody because they were just, like, consistently having the worst lifetime of their life, whoever you were, whoever you would talk to on the phone.
Oh, by the way, so in my, for people who think we're going on a tangent right now, we're not. In my presentations, I talked about some K-Fest alumni, Eric Shepard and Tony Diaz and Joe Cohn and Ryan Suinaga. And they all used to live in California. And so, or not Ryan Suinaga, but on, like, Ryan would go to California and he would get all those people together. And instead of Kansas Fest, they would call it Pizza Fest. So, like, this was a thing. It was like a gathering of Apple II users, I think, in the Bay Area, and they called it Pizza Fest.
But it's definitely not a tangent, because so much of this is that social interaction and, like, the little, like, hey, I'm headed to the store. You want to go to the store? Or, hey, I'm going to go for a walk. You want to go for a walk? Let's go over and grab an ice cream or something like that. It's there's so much of that that kind of happens as part of this event that it's very pertinent to the greater Kansas Fest experience.
I mean, that's, like, for me, that's kind of what it's all about. I know, like, I guess, like, my first year, I think I went to a bunch of presentations, but then I realized, you know, I can watch those later.
Yeah.
When I'm at the event, I want to be, you know, be hanging around with people and having face-to-face interactions and, you know, sitting on the floor and, you know, breaking stuff and then fixing the stuff that I just broke and, you know, tapping into this brain trust that you just don't always have. And
yep.
Yeah, you know, because I've given any number of Kansas Fest presentations, but I'm just like, this is going to be archived online.
Mm-hmm.
But
there are a lot of brains at Kansas Fest I would not trust.
That's why you just got to know who to trust. Mm-hmm.
But there's also that's a good thing, because there's also a lot of gatherings that, you know, you start talking about something and then it goes and goes somewhere else. Actually, that's how we started, Vince and I, talking about these new projects. We just get together, begin to chat about things, and then one thing came to another. And then that came out, and they say, why don't we work on this? Mm-hmm. And Vince did last year also a big talk in the main lobby, talking about how people should, mm-hmm. you know, start doing more projects for Apple II. And that was part of it also, that we should be doing more things. And it was, at least for me, an inspiration. That's why we work on that and work on also on the emulator and do new things based on the Apple II. And that also brings another thing that I love, is the new 3D printers. Before, I used to destroy things. I feel ashamed of saying it, but I used to destroy some drives and things to create new things. And now I'm very happy because I don't have to, you know, destroy or take something that I used to take modems. And because modems were not really useful, I used to cut them out and put like a SD drive reader
right.
in a nice uh-huh. case. Now I don't have to destroy them. I can recreate it, and I keep my things pristine. So I'm very happy about it. But that's part of it, you know. Yep, we want to keep things up, and we want to create new things that make people's lives easier, mm-hmm. and happier, and novelty. You know.
By the way, to those last two points, I want to quote directly from Wikipedia for Kansas Fest right here. A number of important new products have been released at Kansas Fest or developed through collaborations between individuals who likely would not have gotten together otherwise.
Nice.
Some of the most notable have been the introduction of the Lance GS Ethernet card and the Marinetti TCP/IP stack for the Apple II GS.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
And a lot of ideas come out when, you know, we go into the SARC room. Everybody's fixing things, doing things over there, and somebody says something, and that sparks that and say, oh, we should create something like this, and then people chime in, oh yeah, why don't we do this and this and this, and, you know, an idea comes out, all of a gathering of people that otherwise wouldn't get there.
That's I always say the three most the most dangerous phrase at Kansas Fest is I wonder if.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although, Javier, you did say it's the SARC room. I think we finally had a vote. It's actually called the SARC side now.
Okay.
So if you hang out in there, you've been taken over by the Sark side.
That's right.
But yeah, that is definitely one thing that is really cool about the in-person meeting is just sort of like striking up random conversations and seeing where that goes. I mean, like, I think that's one thing that the virtual event doesn't really have. I mean, that was one of the thoughts behind sort of like splitting things out this way, was that there's stuff you do in the dorm with people for a week, and then there's session presentations, and those, the different modalities don't necessarily sort of work as well for each thing. So virtual is great for sessions, not so great for just like random running into each other and coming up with ideas and, fixing your broken thing. So that's one thing that is really cool about the in-person thing, is just being stuck with all these people who are focused pretty much like you, and have interesting ideas that you hadn't thought of, and vice versa. It's really...
And that means just remind me that right now we were talking in this Kansas Fest about the rubber feet for some mm-hmm. Apple II, the drives and all that. This is for the Unidisc drive. This is an original mm-hmm. one. And we just recreated in rubberish 3D material. So yeah, and that came out from Kansas Fest. That's another one.
And it's not turned into gum.
No, it's exactly. And it's rubbery material, but it's not. It's called TPU, I think. And Vince came out with that, and we just created it, and that's it. It's already working, and we got the files online for people.
I love it. Yeah, you can see behind my head I have a Mac TV, and that thing I have to put it on like paper or something, because it'll like stick and put goop all over anything I set it on. It's super annoying.
Yeah, I got to do that. The plotter feet are absolutely disgusting, and they're destroying the table I put them on.
Yeah, so we're creating new stuff. Yeah,
the upshot of that, Paul, with that Apple TV is that. If I just come over and just pick it up, you'll never have to worry about it again.
Exactly.
It'll just be, now it's somebody else's problem. You can emotionally move on from all the mess. Yeah. Just let me know. I'll be.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, I have been sort of moving things around in my office, and those feet are really super annoying. I think that is it's kind of like an unsung area of our hobby that really needed, some work. And always like 3 out of 4 feet fall off of every like profile drive and stuff. So
it's the same with Sun workstations and their disk enclosures. Was always the same. Everywhere you set it down, you could tell the last 5 places on your bench you've set this thing.
Yeah, I have.
And I hate the ones that are really like weird feet, because there's feet that you can get somewhere, but there's weird feet like this for the Apple IIgs.
Is that for the monitor, or is that for the...
It's for the monitor.
Yeah, I've lost a few of those.
So they got like some kind of weird edges or groups or something like that. Mm-hmm. And those you cannot get anywhere. So that we can recreate them, it's a lot better. I'm actually just printing them right now.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, Apple has been proprietary since the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it's not anything new or different or interesting. They've done proprietary stuff since like 1977.
Yeah. Well, except that their machine had very little proprietary stuff in it and was therefore cloned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah, the first one, yeah.
But, I mean, I will agree with you, though. They have always seemed to have this form over function attitude towards their design. And that is...
Well, that was Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Woz would have been like, fine, here's a naked board. Just knock yourself out.
Yes, 100%. I don't know. So am I the only person who is like annoyed by that aspect of Apple II, and everyone else just thinks it's an amazing integral part of the machine? Is that just me?
I think it's just...
I mean,
it can be a pain in the butt, because, when we're trying to restore this stuff, find, I'm going to send the, I gotta get around to doing this. Javier is going to model the plotter pen holder.
Yep.
for the plotter so that we can, you know, recreate that. Cause I'm sure those are of the two plotters I got, only one of them had that piece. And that's a really important piece. Yeah. You and your joystick obsession.
She gave me this joystick and, you know,
I gave it to him for parts. I'm like, here, this will help you fix other joysticks. And he's like, oh, here, I fixed both of them. And I'm like,
My OCD made me create.
Because Javier.
I gave them to you for parts. I figured you'd know. I just think it was funny. And I'm just like, so I'm going to send that to Javier as soon as I get around to it and get that modeled and then. Because it's hard though, because right now I'm also in the middle of trying to get it running, and it's like I only have the one.
But that's the thing, KFest. We come with these issues, with these problems, and we find about solutions. We think about it. We come with them, and then we share with the community. So maybe somebody else has the same problem, and you know.
Yeah, at least I got the both plotters. You know, I figured if I could cobble one working one out of them, but since the other one's pretty close, and it's just like I can make sure it gets to a good home.
Maybe we can make Paul take out his plotter and try it again.
Yeah. And if it breaks, then it'll already be you'll already have the model.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only problem I see is there's a tiny little metal spring in the thing that you're going to get to play with.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
I was going to say Javier did like a cool KiCad. TinkerCAD boot to kind of get people up to speed on kind of like some of the tools and stuff and how to use primitives to make all this amazing stuff. So it's really awesome that we have people kind of in this community that have those skills that you may not have those skills, but want to get those skills so they're very accessible and willing to answer questions and things like that. Or just be like, hey, what are you looking for? Yeah, give me 10 minutes. And then there's a part.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but I do my best. That's it.
Yeah. But Kat, you're really lucky because I asked Javier, I was like, hey, like I need some, you know, can you model for this? And he told me he doesn't do nudity anymore, so.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
I know. Yeah. I just, he said, I'm married now. Can't do it. I'm like, all right.
Not at all.
Yeah, another thing about the plotters, this is just sort of a tangent thought, but I think, you know, on all of the plotters and, you know, out there in the world, the pens are running out. I mean, like, you know, that's going to be the trick, is to find some way to re-ink them. I mean, even if you have new old stock pens, they're still dry.
No, they're not. The ones that I've opened so far in this new old stock box have been fine, and the four that were on the cylinder that I, of the one that I got, were fine, so.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yes. So,
but it's still something we would like to solve. But yeah, I have a couple of bags of these, and I'm not sure if they're going to work. But I would like to know how to make them work someday. So maybe that's the next thing after the feet.
Vin said something about that. About people have figured that out too.
Yeah.
He came in. He came in to the workshop when I was, you know, I had one of these things like in pieces, trying to figure out which one actually worked and which one didn't, and how to clean them. And he's like, yeah, somebody. He seemed pretty confident that somebody had figured out how to fill them. I assume it's just like filling like any other ink. Like, yeah, you can refill ink jets. It's like a needle, and you just like plunge the ink into the tank, I assume.
Well, there was an Atari printer that was sort of like a little plotter, right? Josh, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I mean, so I was going to ask, this mechanism, I take it this mechanism is not a thing anymore, because in the Atari world and in the Tandy world, there were a bunch of plotters that used a particular Alps mechanism, and it turns out those are still a thing because someone out there still uses them, and you can still buy newly manufactured pens for them.
I'll send you pictures of the mechanism, and you can tell me, this is what the pens look like.
The Atari pens are actually sold by a French company, and they sell them really, really expensive, each one, because they're used for something medical now.
Huh.
I assume somewhere you could like punch a hole with a needle in this.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of investigating how they work, and then punch a needle, pull it out, and it will work.
Fill it up, because this is paper dot 7, so these are the wider. They came in two different inks and two different pen widths, so you could do paper or you could do like overhead transparencies. Mm.
Francois in chat is asking about the measurements, so that might be something good to put out there and just say, like, you know, I got my my micrometer out and just kind of, you know, and just kind of here's what the dimensions are.
I don't, Francois, because I don't own a micrometer, but I will, like I said, I'm going to send this stuff. The problem is I have like sets of four of pens, and it's like, please don't destroy the pen part because I need these. So, but I don't know how else we're going to be able to model it without opening one up.
Well, you just need to trace it with your new space pen thing, and then we'll have
yeah.
it.
Space pen thing, yeah, right?
X-ray machine?
Yeah, no, I don't know. Like I said, it's just like this, and this one, this the one that came with it, it's the different colors. So it's got like the the orange, the red, the purple, and the yellow.
And now I'm wondering how, if we could use that Atari plotter on an Apple II.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Probably.
I can send you, yeah, I'll send you a video of the thing actually like running. And you can make decisions from there.
Yeah.
Like Francois is saying in chat, the other technique that I see a lot used a lot is people just 3D print adapters to use any old common blotter pen in these
things. Yeah, and that would be, because that wouldn't be actually too terribly difficult if you could, as long as it fits in this, in this slot.
That looks like something Javier could whip up in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, right? You could probably
starting
take something in
now.
Something like that. As long as the, you know, the tolerances were correct.
Yeah.
The other thing that that I don't have, if anybody has one that we could model, there actually was a thing that came with the plotter, so you don't have to put, these are little rubber that they come off to protect the pens, but there was actually a whole like circle that you could put this whole thing into and you don't have to worry about losing all these little rubber caps all the time. Hmm. It's like, I can't remember what it's called. It's in the manual, which is a file on my computer at the moment. But that would be another cool thing if we could find and model for these things. The pen, it's called the pen capper. Included in your plotter is a handy pen capper. It provides a parking place for the pen head when you are not using it, and it keeps the pens from drying out. Look at figure 2-5, which I'm not going to try to share my screen. You simply plug the pen head into the capper and twist it 1/8 of a turn clockwise.
Ooh.
So there actually was something called a pen capper that came with it that you didn't have to worry about keeping track of the tiny little rubber feet. So if somebody happens to have one of those and is interested in letting someone like Javier model it, that would be cool as heck.
Maybe I can just peer in my head
and figure it out. Yeah. Well, there's a picture in the plotter made. A shout out to Internet Archive, by the way, because the OCR they have of the Apple Color plotter manual. One, has been super helpful because it exists, but two, whoever scanned it, on one of the pages, there's actually like written stuff that says for use with the same super serial card as an ImageWriter printer and for use with 2C settings and the 2GS settings that you would need to run this thing on more modern Apples, because it was designed to run on like a 2E or an Apple III. And so that was like, that's been super clutch just to be able to, you know, use it with set what are the dip switches. There are actual dip switches on the plotter that you have to reset. So whoever's copy of this was, clutch, because that's, like I said last night, I got the 2C to send a command singular to it, but I haven't got it to actually like accept any. Apparently you're supposed to be able to like type commands in a word processor like Apple Writer and then send it to the plotter, and the plotter is supposed to read that and actually like draw stuff. Ooh, I haven't gotten that far yet.
That's a fancy plotter.
So it's actually simple. I mean, it's got a Z80 board on it. It's just it's taking the text and reading the text and saying, okay, these are the commands.
Now we need some sort of like there are sort of like printer emulators. We need a plotter emulator that will you could plot to. That'd be pretty cool.
I think one of the Atari printers emulated by the Fujinet is a plotter, the 1027 plotter.
Cool. All right. So it's quite possible that an Apple II could talk to that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, when I installed WordPerfect on, I love telling this story. I installed WordPerfect on my DOS tower because, of course, I'm going to because it's WordPerfect. And when it asks me about printers, one of the printer options, it has ImageWriter 2 drivers in WordPerfect because it's just a serial, it just sees it as a serial printer. Mm-hmm. So I could hook up my one of my ImageWriters to my 486. I have the original printer I use with my 40. I have the Star Micronics 1000. It's in the closet, but I was like, oh, wow, that's neat.
The Cito printers were just everywhere.
Because they were cheap.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm observing that we have managed to be podcasting for an hour and a half. And it's possible that at some point we will need to wrap this up.
Yeah, probably. My my voice is obviously is kind of starting to, I'm still not 100% over all of the interesting friends, tiny friends that I picked up at Kansas Fest. Because I picked up a whole bunch of tiny friends besides the main tiny friend. Apparently I managed to, if there was a tiny friend in the dorm, it came home with me.
You know, I didn't want to say anything, but I did see you lick that one doorknob. And I just, I was like, Kat, you know your immune system better than I do, but just
yeah, you know, my day job is supposed to give me the immune system of the gods, but apparently right. by the middle of summer, it's not working like it's supposed to.
So yeah, so I mean, I guess we've been just sort of like tangenting along. Is there any sort of like a closing thought that everyone wants to contribute?
Mm-hmm. Usually, we go around and say if we want to plug anything.
Okay, we could do that. Ken, would you like to plug anything?
Yeah, Ken?
Before I do, I need to explain/apologize. I'm not accustomed to video podcasts, and it's something that's gotten me into trouble in several work Zoom calls is I have a resting jerk face. So if anybody saw me like glowering when I wasn't talking, it was not in response to anything that was happening anywhere in the world. It's just that's how my face rests. So thanks. I again, props to Paul and the rest of the committee for putting on the online component. It was nice to be able to interact with people in that medium and feel safe doing so. So thank you for that. I guess if I'm going to plug something, it'll be a2central.com, which is your total source for Apple II computing, which was a very ambitious phrase when the site was launched 23 years ago. Just today, I launched a directory of video content about the Apple II, so YouTube and Twitch channels, which includes at least four people who are on.
Everyone but me, I think, right?
Yeah, everyone but you, including Chris, who just left. So five of you are all listed there. There's like 16 different channels you can check out. So that's on a2central.com. And the site hasn't been updated as frequently as you expect for Kansas Fest having just happened. But that's because it's a one-person shop, and I have a lot of other Apple II projects and hobbies. But I do think the content that does go up there is valuable to the Apple II community. You know, so quality over quantity is my motto, or rather my defense. So, yeah. So thanks also for having me on this show.
Great. Yeah, thanks.
And then I'll pop it over to Josh.
Oh, wow. Okay. Tag on the spot. I have nothing Apple II related to plug. I enjoy looking at and working with everything that everyone here creates, whether it's the show or the streams or the live streams, the Retro Repair Roundup, that's fun. I enjoy that. Thank you all for doing that and the stuff that you do. I'm just happy to be a part of the general vintage computing community. There can be some portions of the vintage computing community that aren't necessarily as friendly and as open to outsiders, and this is not one of them. This is a great community. I love it, and just really happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here.
Great, thanks. Now you have to pick who's next.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna go one square up. Let's see, in logo, that's FD50, right? And Tag Cat.
Oh yeah. So yeah, just everybody. I mean, yeah, it's cool to be here, and I'm glad everybody was able to come out and hang out with us and listen to us, you know. And this is what I like about the hobby. This is why I do. People are like, you know, why do you do this? I don't. People are like, why do you do the stream? And it's not for money. Let me tell you, it's a reason to hang out with all of my retro computing friends once or maybe hopefully soon more times a week and play games and, you know, figure out, you know, just kind of keep in touch with everybody. And also to, you know, be, because I'm a recovered, semi-recovered drama rat, so it's a performance. But yeah, tomorrow I'll be streaming. I don't think I'm going to beat Lord of Storms, but I think I'm going to find the final dungeon. It's only been 3 weeks. I don't remember where I am. We'll figure it out. twitch.tv/LadyIluros. It's here. Yeah. And yeah, if you don't, go ahead, give a follow on the channel, be notified when I go live. It's usually Sundays, 1 to 3 Eastern. And we play retro games on the actual hardware. I do stupid, you know, hardware tricks to get it going, and we have a good time. And I'm going to tag Ron.
Thanks, Kat. Hi, I'm Ron from Ron's Computer Videos. You might also recognize me from the Retro Repair Roundup with my good friend, Javier. I just wanted to say, make sure if you are not following Kansas Fest on Twitter and other wherever you get your social media, be sure to just search for Kansas Fest, all one word. You'll get updates about things that are happening in the community. You'll get advance warning when tickets go on for sale for next year's event. And get follow-ups and maybe easier to kind of digest information about where to go and see the talks or follow up on, hey, I did see something neat and I now want to get more information about that. So definitely check that out. Don't forget, you can also go to kansasfest.org. Kansasfest.org is kind of your central jumping off place for all things Kansas Fest. There's lots of good links and stuff out there. If you're interested in watching videos about things that you saw or getting kind of people's personal experiences from things that they did at the event, if you go on YouTube and search for the hashtag Kansas Fest, there's a ton of videos from this year and previous years that should give you a great sort of introduction to what the event is all about if you've never done a Kansas Fest before. You can find more information about me at ronscompvids.com. So thank you. Javier.
Hey. So I'm Javier Rivera. You can find me at Habmaster at YouTube. Also on Blue Sky and all these things, but also I wanted to compliment what Ron said. We also have a page, an official page on Facebook for Kansas Fest. So be sure to follow that one. We're going to be updating that one a lot. And we also have a Blue Sky, you know, name, KFest, I think it is. so we're going to be using that too a lot more. So make sure you follow us. And again, Kansas Fest forever and Apple II forever. Paul.
Excellent. Thanks. Excellent. Yeah. The Facebook page is new. That's good. And I think there's a Mastodon account too. So we can all, we don't need to pay attention to the X social media site that used to exist.
Oh, bird site. Yeah.
It's still Twitter. It's still Twitter. Just call it Twitter. Drive it.
Oh, when I said X social media, so I had an E in front there. But So I guess I'm generally I'm on the Retro Computing Roundtable, so rcrpodcast.com, and I definitely check, you know, keep track of the Kansas Fest YouTube channel. We'll have all of the sort of encapsulated talks there pretty soon. So. Yeah, and there's a mailing list. If you go to the kansasfest.org, there'll be a mailing list you can join. And the Discord server is the place where a lot of the sort of communication happens. So unless you hate Discord, which some do, but maybe you can just for this one thing, you can. The KFest server is a nice one server. You don't need to pay attention to any other servers if you don't want.
So is that server going to remain unfrozen?
I think we were talking about this a little bit. So last year what happened was we didn't have the sort of like moderation bandwidth to sort of keep it going through the periods between the meetings. And I think we would like to see if we can manage it to keep it as a place to, you know, converse. It's gonna die down in activity for sure between meetings. So I think it's probably not going to be very active, but we're looking at the possibility of keeping it open. But I think we also, the committee itself has not met. So there's stuff to discuss.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's going on.
Because it seems like there's a lot of conversation around projects that's sort of still continuing. And if that could constructively and safely serve as a hub for momentum around those projects, that could be a good thing.
Yeah. I think I agree. There's a Appletoon Infinitum Slack workspace that a lot of people are in, but it's not entirely overlapping groups. So I think it would be good if we can keep it open. But the decision is not entirely final yet. So
mm-hmm. Cool.
But still, Paul has thrown down the gauntlet. If it stays active and it stays friendly, there's a possibility it'll stay up so that all that momentum from Kansas Fest can continue throughout the year. Yep. So be kind and post early, post often.
Hey, before we go, I assume many of you have seen me at Kansas Fest doing this thing called 1 second every day, where I record 1 second of video every day. And at the end of the year, I have a 7-minute video that encapsulates my entire year. Clearly, this is the most important thing that's happening to me today. Would you all like to be in my 1 second?
Yes.
Sure, we can do that.
Cool. Here we are. So on the count of three, we'll all say Kansas Fest, okay? One, two, three.
Kansas Fest!
Okay, 1 second doesn't work if you draw it out to be 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas Fest!
All right,
Kansas Fest!
Cut. One, two, three.
Kansas Fest.
Thanks,
friends. Awesome. All right. Yeah, so I guess we should, now that we've sort of gone around and signed off, I think we probably should close this off. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you for watching, if you were watching. Thank you for participating, if you were participating. And I guess we will see you on the wild internet and at the next camp.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.